Hi, good afternoon. Sanchez, FA agency. I would like to ask Rodrigo, this brutal leap in your film, Concursante, doing short films, and all of a sudden you've got 8,000 copies all over the world. It's a big feature film, recognition in Sundance and world expectation. Thank you. Well, this demonstrates once again that nobody knows nothing or anything. A priori, you would think we would systematically think you'd done the film following the rules of what we should do to achieve success and contravene them one by one later on. One of the reasons that I was attracted by the film from the first moment is because it was impossible. It was impossible to make. It was an absolutely nonsensical and a perfect reason to jump from the 18th floor and into the deep end. And it's like a snowball which has grown and grown, unstoppably, shall we say, but it's not being meditated nor controllable. All our energy was directed in doing, making the best possible film, convinced that, albeit that we had the most nonsensical tools in our hands, we had all the necessary material to make a thriller which was highly intensive and that would hit you right in the smack bang in the gut of the audience that would be watching the film. Hi, Rodrigo. Congratulations for the film, first of all. I'm still in a state of shock. I hope so. And I would like to say that it's reminded me of Vertigo in the credits at the beginning, as well as in certain images, the idea of a man in a coffin. I would say with your director of reference was Hitchcock. Undoubtedly, in this film, he was, because if you want to start up a narrative and technical challenge of this nature, you've got to look at the best, and the best undoubtedly was Hitchcock. And he carried out these types of approaches, which are nonsensical against common sense, like naufragos halfway in the middle of a ship, or the hangman in a single sequence. When you address making this film, you feel very lonely because you start to analyze those references, as happens with these Hitchcock films, and then you have a series of elements that you don't have available to you. There are 9 people, different characters. You can use 2 of them and you get bored of them. You can change to another 2. And there's change, there's calm, and all of a sudden there's a storm at sea, it's daytime, and then it's in the afternoon, the clouds come along, the stars come out at night. There are a series of elements with which you don't find, or you know, you've only got a box and you've got an actor, you've got a guy, and limits for 3 centimeters from his cameras, from his, and you know, a coffin's not transparent, as you can understand. So therefore, you've got to take away those walls, you've got to make them explode, as if by using dynamite, and then try to do it. It's as if everything was taking place in New York or in a tropical jungle or in a big giant planet, believing in the size of the story. Somebody asked me, would it be strange or obscure or no, it would be Indiana Jones within a box, I said, and so therefore in a coffin. The challenge wasn't even to take, it was to try to turn things around. Was it difficult to carry out, to work with the actor? I thought of Ryan Reynolds, because he's a great actor, sensational. I saw him in The Nines by John August 3 years ago. About 16 people have seen all over the world. One is the mother of Ryan Reynolds, and that's where I discovered an actor that can develop the most committing and deep and a sense of timing, and also a great sense of timing. If you're going to make a film with 4 elements, the best thing is to have a very deep, in-depth sense of detail. He has a great feeling for sense. It was very difficult for him. We took him back to Los Angeles with a bleeding back, and his fingers were burnt because of the heat of the lighter, and his skin was exfoliated in the best of the cases. And that was the simple side of things. The emotional side of things was much harder, because he develops the entire human catalogue of possible extreme emotions. Hi, good afternoon. I'm over here. I would like to ask you whether this story, you'd thought about it beforehand, this project, or whether it's just emerged a little while ago and you made the film. And congratulations, by the way, for your work, the film. I liked it very much. I think we've all liked it very much. Thank you. Don't tell me. Please write about it. Don't tell it to me. Write about it, please. It's not my script, so therefore it's not my idea. And I can guarantee that if you want to carry out a 1.5 hour project in a film, you better have a good script in your hands. I would love to say that I carried out with enormous talent and a minor work to take it into the noble film that you see. You've got to have perfect timing for all of this. And apart from buried, and it's the hunger of knowing at the beginning of the film, in minute 8, one wants to leave the theater because you're not going to be able to bear it because your body rebels against it and it starts to hyperventilate and you start to sweat a lot, like Camacho, the Spanish football coach. But you can't leave the room, you can't leave the cinema because you want to know what happens later. So in my opinion, this comes from the writing of the script. That's where the merit lies. And you can film it in many different ways, this script. And the most sensible one would be to film what happens on the outside, the other characters, bring some oxygen into the inside of the coffin. But I personally thought it was a perfect way of ruining everything. And paradoxically, in my opinion, I would have made the film much smaller. I always saw it as a great film because the size of the stories doesn't depend upon the cubic centimeters. And in my opinion, if we would have shot it another way, in the best of the cases, we would have had a good TV episode. Rodrigo, well, I think your film has a lot of merit. It's made me think in looking about new ways of expression for cinema and an experiment and the situation that the miners are living in Chile now underground. That news we see on a day-to-day, those people that are underground, the reality has got stuck to the film to a certain extent. I don't know whether you've thought about that. Yes. Apart from Chile, I designed it personally. The Chile took no. No, that was a joke. These things just take place. One can't anticipate these things happening. But of course, once again, we demonstrate that reality always exceeds fiction. And no matter how nonsensical any type of premise is, reality gets ahead of things. The episode of Chile has got its own movie in itself to a certain extent. Billy Wilder made when he did The Great Carnival, which has a lot to do with happens inside and with the media show that it's analyzed or that occurs around it. That Danny Boyle will probably make next year, I'm pretty sure. And apart from congratulating you, I'm going to keep to over here. I'll write it instead of saying it to you, but I want to ask you a question, a very short remark. Apart from Billy Wilder and leaving and using the camera outside would ruin the final result or the discourse of the film, I'm sure. But I would like to think about one of the masterworks of Lelio Comen, Obsession, if they'd have had a mobile phone. So therefore, it's a fundamental importance that there has to be a mobile phone in this case, a mobile telephone in this case, so that the story can have a development within that closed space. Yes, the story of cinema, there's a handful of films that have had a sequence that have taken place in a premature burial or in a coffin. The longest one probably lasts 7 minutes of these, and quite probably will be Kill Bill 2. I'm not up to date as regards to coffins in cinema. And then the small achievement of my film has made the best film in history internally located within a coffin, but just within a coffin. It's not a great achievement, perhaps, but it's my great achievement for myself. Once again, when one analyzes these scenes, one feels quite lonely because there's not too many references, the truth be said. At the end of Vanishing, there's a sequence which is quite agonic and spectacular, but it lasts for 2 minutes. Kill Bill 2 goes beyond the common sense, a premise which you believe to be impossible with a scene which lasts for 7 minutes, which is magnificent. But as you've got to spend 94 minutes within a coffin, you've got to invent a couple of things, I believe. So therefore, in our case, everything happened because we wanted to go beyond common sense. The first thing was to not think about the location at all, just about the story in itself and the emotions that I want to awaken within the audience. And then secondly, in the tools, in the suitable cinematographic tools, to think whether it was possible to do so within a coffin or within a box. If you focus upon this, you're going to limit yourself. You're going to focus upon the restrictions or limited space, and we didn't want any limitations. We wanted to flow with complete freedom, and I insist, explode and make the walls of the coffin explode and get rid of them, albeit it's impossible to do a traveling 360 degrees. We didn't want to renounce that possibility. We just wanted to use the adequate tool. If we had to use a shoulder cam, with very organic approach to have enormous violence at a certain sequence. We didn't think that obviously it's impossible to use a shoulder cam within a coffin, or it was necessary to use a crane. And only later did we find the way of doing this within a coffin. That's why we designed and built 7 different types of coffins to manage to take those impossible frames with mobile. One would have mobile walls which had hydraulic bearings, and so the walls could move, and we could do a traveling which was taking place in real time without any green screens, without 3D in the edit. We wanted to make it very tangible, very rough, and very physical. Buried is a physical experience, above all. It's not a film to be seen. It's a film to be experienced. It's not to see it with your eyes. It's to be felt with your bones, your muscles, with your blood, with your whole body. The objective is that the audience leave the cinema, a theater, with 2 kilos less of weight. Okay, I want to ask a question to the producers. Start from the idea. I'm not too sure why, but one should be the most expensive film in Spanish cinema this year. And I imagine you should be very happy with the results. And I want to ask you whether, and the success that I think it's going to achieve. And I wanted to ask you whether you thought, or whether you had the hope when the film was made that such a commercial film was going to come out, as vis-a-vis how it was addressed from the outset. Well, basically, for us, when we produced the film, we didn't think about commercial side of things, just what we felt like as an audience to see on the screen. And in this case, Buried's script was quite a unique script. We read it and we thought it was something that had never been seen in the movies, and it was something that he felt like. And when he gave it to Rodrigo, and he felt so enthusiastic and so sure about how it was going to be made and how it was going to be transferred onto the screen, that script, that is to say, well, we got involved in the project. The commercial dimension, well, it started to grow slowly but surely, but at the end of the day, it's a film that we made with a lot of passion, quite passionately, and a lot of love, and it's grown. And we'll see how far it goes. In any case, albeit it's not the most expensive film of Spanish cinema, it's very expensive for us because it's been a personal wager of ours, professionally speaking. And obviously, we're very satisfied with the result that the film is already achieving at present, or so far. Hi, good afternoon. In times of war, there's a lot of torture goes on. Hi. I wanted to ask you whether you knew whether there is any, this is an accusation, it's a very big accusation in the film, of the fact that the North American government leaves to one side these types of situations and forgets about them. Whether you thought, or whether the scriptwriter drew it from a real situation or a suspected real situation. And then I would also like to ask, could you tell me what type of burial do you think for yourself? How do you want to be buried? I'll start by the second question. I want to be cremated. And in fact, we're thinking about the sequelae, or the second part of this film, and cremated would be the most commercial film, or cremation. If we use Hitchcock terms, McLaughlin. I like political. Buried is not a political thriller. That's why I like musical, but I can assure you that Ryan doesn't sing in any of the sequences in my film. However, there's a part which is more powerful. What I mean is that the political or ideological truce lasts for about 6 weeks, and immediately a new information appears later on which sheds new light upon one had seen, and we have to reevaluate things again. But the stories of limited premises usually have an allegoric and metaphorical capacity, which is very powerful. It's like when one reads Richard Matheson's stories of the 1950s and 60s, when one sees The Devil on Wheels, for example, and there's only a truck and a car, for example. It's not quite evident, but nevertheless, it's very, very powerful. And there's a lot of, it branches out, for example, like what happens in I'm a Legend, or even the Romero 1970s, when you see Zombie, or the Dawn of the Dead, for example, and you see zombies attacking a shopping mall. But there's a remark here, that's a much more powerful social remark. Going beyond the ideological, this is a high-tension thriller, and apart from the high-voltage thriller, for example, and that's why people are committed to the Paul Connery's enemy is bureaucracy at the end of the day. That's his main enemy, and people feel so close, and there's so much empathy towards the character, not because that Nick last weekend he was buried alive and they share memories. That at least is what I hope. But we've all tried to change a telephone company and we've spent 40 minutes pressuring one, pressing two, pressing one, trying to talk desperately with a human being. And when all of a sudden we've managed it, we discover that we're their problem and their only objective they've got to live is to become the problem of another person. Or be turned into a problem of another person. That's one of the driving forces of the film, that feeling of frustration, absolute frustration, which accompanies this agonic nightmare, how this communication is almost impossible. One is a priori an instrument which is created to facilitate communication. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter whether you're in the middle of a coffin or on the ocean or in outer space, because everything becomes very complicated. This goes beyond ideologies, beyond countries. It goes beyond political systems. And one is feels recognized as like the character that 9,000 kilometers away from there makes a decision quite probably looking his spreadsheet without being responsible of the real consequences that it has to press a certain button. Things don't always occur that way, but we've always felt quite often in situations which are very similar to his. That's one of the reasons why the people end up biting their nails. The idea is to people end up biting all of their nails off watching the film. That's probably why it happens. Next question, please.
Hola.
Hi. Have you managed to take tension away during the shoot of the film? As I imagine, there was a lot of stress because obviously shooting what you're shooting in the film, all that the drama and tragedy, we didn't manage to do so. How did you do? Jokes? No, the truth. No, not at all. No. It's not that the film was made in 8 weeks or 5 weeks because we didn't have enough time. It was made in 17 days. We filmed it 17 days. This means that instead of making the 8 or 10 takes a day, if someone is especially quick, 15, 16 or 17, we systematically 30 or 35 a day were done every day. One day we took 55, 52 a day. There was like a biscuit factory. All we had was time to shoot, and the conditions were very agonic and very extreme. I say this, and I'm not just saying that I'm proud, but please don't. I don't want anybody to go through this like I did again. For Ryan, especially physically, it was very, very hard on him. He went back to the U.S. and Los Angeles in these conditions, disastrous conditions physically. But this was translated to the rest of the people that work with me. I've never suffered so much apart from the 17 days. The level of maximum concentration that you have to, and the tension that you have to maintain to make it possible, to make possible what's impossible, because it wasn't easy to do so in that environment. It was quite extreme, and I'm sure we've lost some years in life, of our lives in doing shoot, but we believe that it's worthwhile. We believe it now because we've still got life to go. When we're about to die, and we know that we could have lived for another 5 years, we'll probably see it in a different way. So therefore, you didn't take any drugs or anything to recover from all of this. No. And no, the circumstances were so tense during the shoot of the film. Quite frequently, we saw members of the staff abandoning the set because they couldn't bear the tension of what they were seeing, despite the fact that they were seeing in the lighting a guy with a microphone and a guy wearing a cap. Despite this, when they saw the screen in the combo, on the screen, it was so agonic what they were feeling and so true, so brutally true, the enormous role played by Ryan Reynolds. They had to take some fresh air. They had to believe they were still alive. I asked you this, for example, in Honey Games, Richard Honeycutt in his opera prima and the remake, the harshest scenes, he used jokes and laughed with the actors to lighten the situation. I didn't know whether he used anything in order to take away that tension during the shoot. That I imagine Ryan lived it very close, well, in first person, just like you did, I suppose. No, we didn't use any artifacts, didn't use anything. There was very little room in that box, and there was very little space for any type of laughter. We enjoy ourselves now in the conference, press conferences, and the tour where we're touring the US. Oh, we're laughing now a lot more than we used to back then. There was no room that more than just for shooting the film. We didn't even do any rehearsals. One of the decisions that we took from the outset, we're not going to... Ryan wanted to discover the things at the same speed that he discovered it, according to Conroy, to confront these challenges in real time. And there was a moment in which the extreme speed and the mutual understanding that we had that directly, we didn't even show the takes. The first rehearsal was shot straight away, so therefore the film evolved organically, very savagely on the other hand, but that agonic feeling and that feeling of an extreme nightmare, an objective nightmare, has nourished the film and it can be perceived. That's one of the reasons why the audience, when it's projected, it's like... you feel very affected. As regards to what you're saying now, I wonder whether you chronologically have shot the film according to the plot of the film. And I imagine to shoot in 17 days, you would have to send... Everything has to be well prepared beforehand and all prepared, or whether you varied things on the move, on the go. Another question is... there's a lot of questions. Well, I'll remind you later. As regards to the lighting, when seeing the film... One feels, could you explain this? The dramatic use of the different types of lights that you've used at different times, playing with the mobile, the light of the mobile, with the green light that they had, or the flashlight. The first question was whether it's chronological. There was very little help. Everything was problematic from a logistics standpoint, that's to carry out this impossible project. So therefore, all of the... We took everything, full advantage of everything. One of the things is if you can shoot on location, you can shoot chronologically, which is absolutely necessary for the development of the story. We always knew from where we were going and where we were going, from where we were going and where we were going to. The biggest challenge was not challenge it within the box, but within a coffin in real time or in this box in real time. So therefore, everything has to... Ryan cuts and edits himself. If something doesn't work in one physical position or something similar, you can't go to another actor and there's no reaction. You can't show a point of view because it's wood. You've got to stay with him all the time. Everything has to have perfect choreography, and emotionally it's very harsh, because one of the reasons for which God invented ellipses in cinema is that you can go directly to the significant situations and eliminate dead times. If a conventional film, an actor breaks down and cries... We can cut to an on-location Central Park and then follow with the film. Here we've got to see how he breaks down, how he recovers, and how he goes ahead. And this can't be a valley of attention, and we have to maintain the tension all the time. The other question was that it took 17 days, let's say in 17 days, chronologically, and whether everything was well prepared beforehand or whether you had to improvise things on the go. Everything has to be well prepared. If you've only got 17 days, the best thing is to direct with the mind of the editing, the editor, because you've got no margin to be able to shoot everything from every possible point of view and for someone else to do the work. This doesn't mean that there wasn't a certain margin to react in alert and to reality in real time. So that one of the obsessions to be able to make a turn this story into film is that the film should reinvent itself every 8 or 10 minutes. Visually and stylistically, it should react in the same way the story does and the character. So therefore, we've got to make sure that we detect it. If anything was being repeated, we should find a way of take it to another place, but with a very rigorous skeleton, shall we say. As regards to lighting, one of the reasons which we wanted to make the film a physical experience is so that people could feel projected to the brain of the actor and the character. So no one could see something that he doesn't see, and people should know anything that he didn't know, so that people could feel identified with this. leaving that box or the coffin would have ruined everything. And light is a fundamental reason for all of this. In a conventional film, when you've got darkness, you've got this false darkness in which you assume that you can see something that the protagonist can't see so that you can continue the action, albeit he may be hitting himself against the walls. In this film, when there's darkness, it's black, it's pitch black. You see what Paul Conroy says. If he can't see, you can only listen. If he can only listen, we can only listen or hear things. And when we use light, it's practically, as the English say, the Anglo-Saxon says, in 90% of we've got a light, that's the only source of light that exists in the film. This means that we always had the diaphragm in the extreme position with a very the thin or narrow depth in the diaphragm, and you're living in the abyss. It's a very delicate balance. If you want to make a film like this, the best thing is to not be afraid of the dark, because you're going to be in the most extreme possible conditions. When he uses the mobile phone as a source of light, which is what you would do if you found yourself in those circumstances, you only see what that mobile phone shows. Undoubtedly, that light doesn't come from a real mobile phone, because it couldn't appear. It's an LED system, but the perception of the audience is exactly the same. Everything that doesn't fall in that is absolutely dark. The same for the green optics, for the flashlight that doesn't work right. It's like a metaphor of the life of Paul Conroy that is hanging on a thread. And when the flashlight, it was like a party, for example. When the flashlight turns on, it's like switching on all the lighting. It's like a maximum intensity thriller with a difference in scale. Remember the scene in which he turns completely within the coffin and he places his head where his feet were, dilating the time to the maximum extreme. That's an adventure in itself. He's moving 0 centimeters, to be specific, but in terms of emotion by the audience, when they see it, it's like walking up the walls of the canyons of Navarone, for example. It's like you went 150 kilometers jumping between pyramids or running away from or responding to the enigma of the Sphinx, or swimming through a deep river, for example. That's what it was like, but all in a coffin. I didn't know that you were going to applaud. What was that all about? Next question, please. Any further questions? I think you've explained yourself quite clearly and very well. Thank you very much.